Hey, what's up, you guys? It's Ben Greenfield. Please don't get upset about today's podcast guest, because the last time I interviewed him, it was super controversial, and I got some nasty comments in the show notes because of all the crazy things that he talks about and the weird biohacks that he does and the controversy about his very unconventional approach to medicine. His name is Dr. Anthony Beck, and today we talk about the danger of psilocybin mushrooms and eating and supplementing seasonally, which sounds boring, but it's really crazy. He trains a bunch of pro athletes, and they eat differently depending on where they're at in the globe. We talk about like the whole lectin controversy, this whole plant paradox thing, a lot. So this is going to be a fun show.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. I get laughed at maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever. But I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. LeelaQ, LeelaQ.com. Use code Ben10 for 10% off. LeelaQ.com. Use code Ben10 for 10% off. In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
And then when my brain starts to go different and my cortisol starts dropping down, that curve you know all about, that's when I hit my far infrared sauna, outfitted with some Ruby Lux light bulbs, and I start banging on my tuning forks. That's after I spend about 20 minutes in my full body light pod, a little photobiomodulation. So what I do is I hit my tuning fork and I put it, of course, at different places, you know, my third eye between, you know, both ears and then under my armpits and then, of course, down in my, you know, manly regions, and just hit some direct tuning.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield here, and I've got a few friends who I would consider to be VIPs or bigwigs or leading authorities or whatever you would call them in the field specifically of health and biohacking. Guys who are out there in the trenches and actually living and practicing what they preach. My guest on today's podcast being no exception, because he doesn't wear headphones, for example, so that he does not fry his head. So we spent about 10 minutes before we started recording hunting him down some headphones to wear. So he actually is a physician who advises some of the world's top military personnel, Spartan athletes, strongman competitors, obstacle course racers. He's a functional medicine doc who's practiced for a couple of decades now. He's got 4 national medical board certifications. He provides philanthropic care for these groups like the Warrior Angles Foundation and the Task Force Dagger Foundation. So he works with some pretty elite military personnel. And he's been on the show before. As a matter of fact, I interviewed him about this tiny hydration invention that he created that I still carry with me during my Spartan races, something called Oral IV. And I'll link to that podcast in the show notes if you want to hear about how he created this really unique approach to hydration. But lately, this guy has been pretty pesky on my own Facebook page. He's been jumping in on topics ranging from everything from mushrooms to methylation. So I figured I'd invite him on the show to take a deep dive into some of the more controversial things that he has a very unique perspective on. So his name is Dr. Anthony Beck, B-E-C-K. You can access the show notes for today's show over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Beck2. That's BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Beck, the number 2, obviously, because I've interviewed him before. And in those show notes, I'll put a link to my previous podcast with the great Dr. Beck. So, Anthony, welcome back to the show, dude.
What's happening, my brother from another mother?
Not much, my brother with a southern accent. Where are you living in? Are you in Alabama?
No, but I am a Roll Tide fan, so you know what's up. But anyways, no, I'm in Central Florida. I'm in outside of Orlando. Outside of Orlando.
It's convenient. Disneyland and rednecks, right?
Yes, sir. Yeehaw! Mm. Yeah, I got a couple of princesses, so you know, we had to. No, that's not why I'm here, but yeah, so Central Florida.
You got a couple of what? What'd you say?
Princesses, so it's convenient, you know?
Oh, yeah, you got little girls, you mean.
That's right. I don't have forests like you do to you know, get them all there. So I'm 45 minutes east or west. I'm dead center of the state to all kinds of ocean, and we got tons of springs here, just surrounded by all kinds of lovely and deliciousness. So
my basement is Legoland, so I actually do have an amusement park at my house. Hey, before we hopped on, in addition to you having to hunt down freaking headphones, and we'll talk about EMF lately, because I know you're not a fan of some of these like EMF blockers and all these devices out there. Well, we can get into that later on, because I know you jumped in on that on my Facebook page. But you said you were up to your own little morning routine this morning. You said you just finished your routine. What was your routine this morning, dude?
Yeah. So my thing is I get up generally about 9 o'clock. I think, you know, I kind of surprised you on our last podcast and
You wake up at 9 o'clock?
Yeah. Yeah. I always like to wake up after the sun or just as it's coming up. So, somewhere between 8 and 9, whenever my body wakes me up. And then, you know, I work in little blocks and little chunks. And so, you know, I rock out for about, 3 hours. And then when my brain starts to go different and my cortisol starts dropping down, that curve, you know, all about, that's when I hit my far infrared sauna outfitted with, some Ruby Lux, light bulbs in there. And I start banging on my tuning forks, but that's after I spend about 20 minutes in my full body light pod, little photobiomodulation.
Wait, you gotta back up and explain some of this stuff to me, man. So these Ruby Lux bulbs that you put in your sauna, this sounds like exactly like what I light my own office up with at night when I'm working at night. They're these little red bulbs.
Yep. So Ruby Lux.
Can you fill people in on those?
Yeah. So, you know, they're warmth. So it's going to be near infrared light bulbs. So they're nice and red and they put out a lot of heat. And, they just, I basically, you know, biohacked my sauna, which is code for drilling a hole in the top and outfitting a 4 outlet light fixture. I stack in 4 Ruby Lux bulbs in a little cross shape up at the top. But of course, I have to be careful not to stand up and get a nice little skin removal on my shoulders. I'm not as tall as you, 5'8", but anyway, it's still an altitudinal challenge. But so I got 4 Ruby Lux bulbs in the top of a far infrared sauna. So I sit in there under the near infrared and far infrared combo after I've, you know, soaked in a little 660 nanometer and 850 nanometer light pod.
Yeah. Okay, so you put those Ruby Lux bulbs inside of your infrared sauna so that you're getting both near infrared and far infrared. Is that why you do that?
That's correct. So I like to combine them. And of course, you know, light has its all its power and its individual wavelengths for sure. But you know, I like to mimic what's going on out there. You know, so and even if it's midday, it's okay because you know I have it in my garage. So there's sunlight coming in too, you know, hitting my eyes. So I don't it doesn't confuse it. I don't like do it in a dark room during the day.
Yeah. And what's this other device that you're in, this photo biomodulation thing?
Well, I actually have the first bed that's ever come to the United States. And it is, a lot of people are familiar with like Thor and their light bed.
Thor?
Thor. Yep. Thor laser.
Okay.
They're like the, Ferrari out there in triple LT or photobiomodulation. I was did some training with Mr. Carroll, who is the CEO of that. It's a fantastic company. They have amazing low-level light laser therapy units that are just phenomenal. And then, of course, then they have a full body pod that is a combination of these two wavelengths as well. But, you know, the difference is, of course, in price point and all that other kind of fun stuff. So.
Well, I wear this on my head. Like, I have this thing called a Vi-Lite. And the reason I wear it, like, every other day I'll put it on. And I actually put it on every other day on purpose, because if you do it too much, you can create too many, from what I understand, reactive oxygen species if you just, like, blast yourself with this photobiomodulation all the time. But it creates nitric oxide. And it also it activates the mitochondria, like in your neural tissue. It's this little probe that you stick up your nose and this hat that you put on. It's called a Vi-Lite. But it sounds to me like you're doing the same thing, except you got like a whole friggin' pod.
Yeah, I mean the Vi-Lite is awesome. I mean, there's so many different things out there. Of course, the market is filled with all kinds of just crap because people are just thinking, oh, it's red light, it's there. That doesn't mean it's putting out enough, you know, irradiance and you're not getting enough joules over time. But as with any energy substance, whether it's air or EMF or magnetic fields or sound or tuning and stuff like that, too much can, you know, have a sedative effect, right? So there's a tonification, sedation curve is what I refer to it as. And so the thing about it is you got to realize that too much of a good thing can, you know, swing you to the other side for sure. But yeah, this is a full body pod of LED strips. It's pretty amazing. So it'll be coming to the market, here pretty soon. We haven't made it completely available.
Well, so people can't even buy this yet.
Not yet. Because I mean, here's my thing, man. I always quantify and make sure before I recommend anything, just like you, man. That's why I love and respect you with so much, you know. And the thing is because, you put your own time into it. And then I run my patients through it, right? So we do biomarkers that we want to modulate and see. You always want to quantify and measure and monitor. So you want to know going into it what you start and then afterwards. And then I have all kinds of frequencies, you know, all the way from, 10 hertz to for folks, with TBI and stuff like that, because, you got to remember that, there's the pulse rate and the frequency plus the wavelength. So there's a formula of what something is. It's like playing on a piano. They're all part of the piano, but, upscale and downscale is going to give it's going to sound different, right? So that's the same thing when you're playing with the harmonics of sound. It's the way you're playing with harmonics of light. So anyway, yeah. So it's all about that. So this bed allows you to do all that fun stuff.
Okay, so you've got your photo biomodulation. So you're getting a nitric oxide release in your body in that mid morning after you've woken up so darn late.
Yeah,
you lazy ass. And then then you do near infrared and far infrared in your sauna because you have like a sauna that you put these light bulbs in so that you get, and a lot of people don't know this. Most of these saunas they are just far infrared. So you're adding the near infrared to that.
Correct.
And then you're also, in addition to that, you said doing tuning forks inside the sauna?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I have two particular ones that I use all the time. They're my go-to. One's a 432 hertz and the other one's a 528. And so
I know that 528 hertz is the frequency of love. What's the other one? What'd you say?
Well, 432 is the one that is reminiscent of the phi, the Fibonacci, the golden mean. Our DNA and everything. So it has a tremendous harmonizing and balancing effect.
Oh, interesting. I actually have this water generating device. I know we're already delving deep into toy territory called a NanoV next to my desk right here. Mm-hmm. And it generates like water that I can breathe, like humidified vapor water that I can breathe while I'm sitting here at work. It also has a nasal cannula you can put up your nose.
Sweet.
And it does that frequency that's in that DNA repair frequency.
That's it.
I forget what's the frequency again? It's
432.
And then 528 is the frequency that would be more for like love and positive feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And DNA repair as well. Just like your whole tones, right?
Right.
I know you're a fan of that. Same kind of deal. I mean,
yeah, that's what I play in my sauna, the whole tone CDs or the whole tones MP3s.
Yeah. So what I do is I hit my tuning fork and I put it, of course, at different places, my third eye between, both ears and then under my armpits. And then, of course, down in my, manly regions and just hit some direct tuning. And then the other thing about that is you can actually take the stem of it or the root of the tuning fork and just touch it firmly to the sauna. And it makes my entire sauna into an echo chamber. So the whole thing is magnified.
Puts
the vibration into it.
I want to try this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So tune in fork, bing, and I can show you the one that I use and you can link that for other folks. But, you ping that bad boy, but you got to make sure you have a hammer, a rubber hammer, because you can create a micronage within the frequency if you hit it too sharp of an object.
What do you mean?
Well, like for instance, I did a video on it once. So in other words, like let's say you have your tuning fork and it has a rubber mallet on the end of it. You hit it with the rubber mallet, you're going to get a whole tone. If I hit it with the wood handle, it's going to create, it's still going to hit at 432, but it's going to be out of phase.
Okay.
Gotcha. So in other words, if you're using tuning forks, you want to make sure you get a whole tone. You want to get the proper tone out of it.
Yeah.
Of course, there's an app for that. There's called Tuner TI, Tuner capital T, one, and so you can just, you can always know, you can just put that app on, hit your tuning fork by your phone, and it'll tell you, it'll show you if it's an
Oh yeah, it's like a digital tuner, just like you'd use for guitar or ukulele, for example.
Roger that.
That's that's interesting. When I talked to that guy, Michael Tyrell, who composes these, for those of you listening, and he composes these tunes, these really amazing tracks that are all tuned to some of these frequencies that Dr. Beck is talking about, like the 528 hertz. When I play those, I'll play them in the sauna. But then the other thing that you can do is you can take, if you're a musician, you can take that same frequency and you can tune, I believe it's the A on your guitar or your piano or whatever, to that same frequency to make sure that you're getting all the same benefits if you're playing music. And for those of you who want to wrap your head around this, I'll link to my interview with Michael. In the
show. He's a lovely man. Just I've never met him, but I've always been a fan. You could just... He's just lovely, you know.
Did you just get these off of Amazon? These tuning forks.
Yeah, but you just don't randomly get it. There are certain companies that sell on Amazon that are the way to go, right?
So
So the thing about it is remember, whenever something is popular, there's going to be somebody out there who just tries to make it cheap, and you know, price point it, and not use the right materials and things of that nature. So it's one of those kind of things to where, I mean, it would take us an entire, deal to go over, you know, who, what, okay. and why, the selection.
I'll tell you what, after we finish this interview, if you send me links to any of this stuff that you like, or mm-hmm. any of the things that we talk about, I'll put them in the show notes for folks. Perfect. So bengreenfieldfitness.com/Beck2, for those of you who are writing things down furiously, you can stop. You can just enjoy and listen. That's a pretty elaborate morning routine. So, are you also, you know, a lot of people will use things like niacin, for example, or other supplements before they do light therapy or before they do sauna. Do you have like a morning supplementation protocol or a pre-sauna supplementation protocol you'd use?
I do. Everything is rhythmic. It just depends. In my summer, my fall, spring, or winter, I choose frequencies and substances based upon that, all the way from, niacin to nicotine to methylene blue, just a whole variety of things. It just depends. In other words, what I want to do with my body at the time, because, you know, you're and also time of day. So I use the term micronages, right? So you have the cycle of the year, then you have the cycle of the day of the light. And then you also have the cycle within your body of your membrane permeability changes throughout the day. It's not always static. And then the other thing is that's reflective of, you know, what you eat. So there are some, you know, there's an algorithm that I have in Balanced Protocol where you are at in that micronage or continuum. And then I base it upon that. Anywhere from, NAD to just a bunch of different things. It just depends upon where I'm at and what I want to do. Certain things I'm certainly not going to do in the evening time because you don't want to artificially upregulate systems biology that is, let's say, in the evening time in the anabolic phase.
Like something like a bioidentical hormone or something anabolic, you wouldn't take that in the evening.
Correct. Or anything that, you know, causes your cell membranes to close. Right. So in other words, their cortisol, you know, governs the morning, and of course melatonin, you know, rules the night, right? So there are competing pathways. Not everything is always the same. So people oftentimes take things based upon the premise of what it is, but it's more than that. In other words, just like I use the example, you know, wheat is more than gluten, right? And, you know, I mean, even cauliflower has nicotine in it. A lot of people don't know that. But the thing about it is it's dose dependent. And so it's more complex. In other words, I wish there was always a simple answer. I have the dubious honor of being that guy that, you know, it's always, you know, yes and no, maybe there to go for, you know, it's one of those kind of things. So my routine through the day is not the same year round. It changes.
Okay. Now you use the term micronages. Is that how you said it?
Yeah. That's my way of saying a frequency within a frequency.
Like micronages, NAGES.
Uh-huh. Yep. Micronages.
I'm not even familiar with that term. Interesting.
Yeah, it's Beck 101.
Okay. So when you're determining what kind of supplements to take during certain seasons, et cetera, and mm-hmm. what kind of foods to eat during certain seasons, are there good resources out there for people, like any good books that delve into how to kind of like structure your diet or structure your supplementation program based on time of day or the time of season?
No, there's not, unfortunately.
Wow. Okay. Well, are there any kind of like besides avoiding like cortisol producing compounds or anabolic compounds at night, and instead choosing more relaxing parasympathetic based compounds, which seems pretty intuitive. Are there any other hard and fast rules when it comes to eating seasonally or supplementing according to these cell cycles and the way you've described?
Yeah, yes and no. See, again, so that way. So in other words, some of the hard rules is where you've determined you are at. Makes the determination. So the patient's unique story, their biochemical individuality and genetic uniqueness. So that makes all the difference, you know, in the world. But here's the thing, like I'll give you an example. So we have catabolic phase from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then we go anabolic, generally speaking, from about 4 p.m. back to 4 a.m. So that's when the two shifts. But some people are inverted. And so they are anabolic in the morning and catabolic in the evening based upon their current status. And that's what you need to know, because I have a rule of what I say is meeting the patient where they are, because you just can't assume that you can say, I never like taking something for something or taking something that does something. Well, that's a big, what I call floating matzo ball out there, right? You know, you got to think about it, that you're presupposing that the body has the ability to receive it, right? It's like me playing tuning forks, you know, on somebody, you know, who's in body armor or a dog bite suit. You're right. Impeding it. Okay. Right. So in other words, you're presupposing. So my thing is I do like certain ideals that are out there, but I'm not dogmatic. So in other words, as the light cycle starts to shorten in the day and the temperature goes down, you need to eat differently. When the light cycle is longer, that's when you can and should eat things typically. But it depends upon where you're starting. If you're already ill and have been out of balance and you've got, you know, dysfunction in systems, you have to find out where you are there and pull somebody out of it. What I call a clinical bridge. You just can't go, okay, you just instantly start giving them anabolic things in the evening and that pushes them out of animalism. You can actually keep them there.
Okay. What would be a few examples of anabolic things you'd avoid in the evening?
Well, the thing about it is you're going to, when I use the term anabolic versus catabolic, it's a situation where, it might be a little bit different, than other people, you know, hear about things. So it just depends upon where you're at. So like, for instance, if a person is, more catabolic, we call that a dysaerobic, imbalance. Okay. So that means that they have too much fatty acids in their cell membranes and not enough sterols.
Okay, got it.
Right? So the thing about, right? So if someone's more versus the opposite of that is anaerobic. So anaerobic people, imbalances, they have too many sterols relative to fatty acids. You know, quite frankly, I see that more and more today. Everybody's on the paleo bandwagon, that whole narrative of, you know, cavemen and ancestral, and everybody has room for their opinion. But my point is this, if you consume all these saturated fats, which are wonderful, they're not harmful. They're not like going to give you heart disease and none of those narratives. Listen, I love coconut and avocado and red palm oil, just like anybody else.
Yeah. But if that's your, I mean, my breakfast right now, while we're talking, as we're not to delve down too deep, a distracting rabbit hole, but I'm literally sipping melted coconut manna mixed with drinking chocolate, chaga mushroom, and some decaffeinated coffee. So I'm literally just drinking up some coconut manna as we're talking.
And that's delicious, man. I could slap that on as an aftershave.
Yeah.
The thing is, my point is if you do that over time, especially through the spring and summer, you will tend to shift your cell membranes into a hypopermeable state. So what happens is you're making them too rigid. And so then now minerals, say calcium, won't efflux correctly.
And the rigidity is due to the type of fats that you're eating or the quantity of those fats?
Both.
Okay. So what you're saying is that in the hotter seasons, or I suppose this would even be the case for like an athlete who has traveled to a different latitude and is training or racing in a hot environment, you'd actually want to shift away from a high saturated fat intake or like the eggs and bacon for breakfast type of thing and shift more into like cooling foods like raw vegetables and fruits and things of that nature?
Nailed it. So that's what I'm saying. So your geographic location is a micronage. So you have multifactorial things to, you know, conduct the symphony. So my point is how I eat or how I work with just, you know, patients, because I work a lot of course with, you know, just everyday folks and entrepreneurs principally, and, you know, business owners and that kind of fun stuff. And so, you know, they're on the go. So their story also has a play into it. What's your environment for hours of the day and at what times of the day? Okay. So there's all these factors that come in the decision-making matrix is what I'm saying. So, you know, like a lot of people say, all the PUFAs are bad, right? Well, that's because they tend to be very dogmatic.
Polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Correct. And they think that, but, you know, by default, they're all there to, you know, harmful. And that's just not true. I use PUFAs to correct people's metabolics all the time. Sometimes I have to give people sources of arachidonic acid from, like, say, corn. What? You're having people eat corn, right, or corn oil? Well, not soaked in acetone, high temperature solvent extracted, right? But whole, you know, food. In other words, working in, you know, things like, you know, blue corn chips or non-GMO different sources and things like that, plus other things, right? So in other words, you have to know what your cell membrane composition is made up of for you to determine what fat is best for you at your given time, matching all your micronages of year, light cycle, behavior, environment, hemisphere, all these things. Does that make sense?
Fascinating. Is there any research behind this?
There's tons. So some of the works that I've studied for all of this, particularly membranes, is Ravici, good old Ravici. And I have Ravici.
How do you spell
it? Just like it sounds, R-E-V-I-C-I.
Yeah, just like it sounds, like a Southern doctor would say it. Are you talking about Dr. Ravici?
Well, yeah, he was a doctor.
Okay.
Yeah, so just R-E-V-I-C-I.
Okay. All right, cool. Got it. So this is the guy who did studies on, like, the response of cell membranes to different intake of lipids.
Correct. And curing cancers with attaching certain minerals to said fatty acids. Because you got to understand, most people, unfortunately, get very scientific and they get tunnel vision, what I call very dogmatic. And the problem is it completely obfuscates the biochemical individuality and genetic uniqueness of the patient. And I understand we'll study, you know, rhesus monkeys and rats and people in different, you know, people in different regions of the world. And we'll say, oh, their diet is great for them and they're Centaurians, therefore I should eat that way. No, sir. You know, I'm Irish through and through. Okay. And I live in Florida. Okay. And you know, all these things, your audience is familiar with what's going on with mitochondria and, you know, heteroplasmy and all these other factors. But to just say that those substances are harmful is very obtuse because you don't know where you're at. And it's the missing link why so many people, you know, they spin their wheels and go, I'm doing all these things right based upon what's out there and what's healthy, but they didn't determine, is it healthy for them? And then it's not static. And it's not static. It changes. You know, latitude, altitude, all of it. It all makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I know because I've talked to some of the people you've coached that you do, like, change their diet and stuff based on where they travel. So that's super interesting. By the way, this Dr. Ravici guy, there's a book about him called The Doctor Who Cures Cancer. I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's very interesting. It says he made the bones grow back in cancer patients, restored health to AIDS patients, drug addicts, and alcoholics. His medicines lifted debilitating migraines in as little as 3 minutes. And then, like, the JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, like, totally shoved them under the bus and published a bunch of false reports about his work. The American Cancer Society blasted him, and there was, like, this big smear campaign to knock out his stuff. I'm going to send this book to my Kindle, dude. I got to check this out.
It's a really good read. It doesn't give the actual work. You have to kind of have an inside scoop on that, and I've got it. I'm more than happy to share that with you, Ben. I'll give you my archive if you want. But it just takes a lot. It's not something I can, like, share the link.
Send me what you got. Knock me out.
You know, you read a book. I love books like me.
Well, actually, what I've been doing these days is I curl up in my sauna in the evening because I save all my physical, like, my paper stuff to the evening because I go no screen time at night, so no Kindle, no phone or anything like that. So when I send a book like this to my Kindle, it, you know, what I do is I preview it And if I nod my head and I'm saying hell yes as I'm previewing it, then I order the paper version. And then what I do at night is I lay out in my infrared sauna, and typically I have like a little one of these acupressure mats in there that I'll lay back on with a little pillow, and I'll pump those whole tone sounds while I lay back and read. And I have like a little vaporizer in there, right? So I'll vape teas and organic tobacco and a little bit of like an indica marijuana, and just sit there and read and highlight and underline. So I'm generally like digesting material for a good hour every night, and they're sweating things out these days. So
And that's amazing. See, that's what I'm saying is you've got these different inducements that you can do at different times. Right. And for other people, that routine might not be beneficial, right? It just depends. You got to always remember that you are a category of one. Everybody is a single entity. So that's my shtick, if you will, for everything on every topic, like the stuff that I've always mentioned, like your Facebook posts and different things of that nature. You know, you got to remember who you are, and that is you have your own current status, and it makes all the difference in the world. Is whether something even in the realms of something else we talked about was like, you know, like pH and things of that nature, right?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, and to set the background, I posted that I drink Pellegrino. Like, if I'm going to buy glass bottled water when I'm traveling, I go for Pellegrino because it actually has a higher mineral concentration and a higher pH, more alkalinity than does like Perrier. Like, a lot of people don't realize a lot of these bottled waters have different pHs. Then you jumped in on that post and you said the pH of water doesn't matter at all. So what do you mean by that? And why is it that you shouldn't even worry about the pH of the water that you drink?
Well, here's the thing. So I wouldn't say it's so cut and dry like that. My point is this, it was something having to do with mineral water, or excuse me, seltzer water, just to be correct here. Seltzer water being bad for your teeth. Okay. Well, first of all, seltzer water, in other words, something like you put in a soda stream, high carbonic acid water. Like if you take like what I do. Okay. So I have an RO system, but I remineralize the water. And with just a little bit, depending upon how I'm going to do it. And then I put it in my soda stream and I put a high carbonic acid in it. So then now what we have is a high carbonic acid seltzer water. But then if I add a little bit of magnesium hydroxide powder to it, that carbonic acid now converts the water, the hydroxide, which would, you know, milk of magnesia, would make you blow your butt out, to magnesium bicarbonate. So if you put it on a spectrum analysis, all the minerals are the same. You just don't know what moiety it was. This is the thing that people are missing. The example I use is the same thing is if you take a cell phone, you got all kinds of apps and phone numbers, data, like tangible, literal information. You've seen the guy who puts it in a Blendtec or a Vitamix and turns a cell phone into powder, right? So if we measure that powder, we put that in a mass spec, we can find out what minerals and everything that's in it, rare earth minerals, stuff like that. But you have no way of knowing what data was in it.
Okay, gotcha.
But the data was there, correct? All right. So my point is, water that is like seltzer water or carbonated soda or something like that, you know, Schweppes, Canada Dry, if you will, is not the same as a Pellegrino that is, yes, carbonated, but also now has a higher total dissolved solid. But then you also have to go to another micronutrient. Okay, let's say it's a 1,200 total dissolved solid Pellegrino. Well, what's the principal minerals in it? Is it more magnesium? Is it more sulfur? Is it more potassium? So again, each water is different. My point is this, no matter what the water is and the total dissolved content in it, your body still has to change that water, just like every food you consume, to your resonant frequency. It has to turn it into you. It has to tune it. Because you just can't, the body can't just, that's why nothing that goes in the hooter comes out the tooter looking anything like it, except for, you know, corn or something. Right? So the thing about it is your body has to transform it into you.
Corn, carrots, and pumpkin seeds. That's usually what I'll sometimes see in my crap if I've been eating too fast.
Right. So I call it the poke and choke. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, that's what I'm saying. So the pH matters to a degree. But if you go and force these like electrocuted waters into your stomach, you now are shifting pH of 9, sometimes 10, down to.
You mean water that's been through like an alkalinized filter, like a countertop, like a Nikan or a Kangen or something like that.
Exactly. So you are artificially making water alkaline. In order to do that, the water can't be devoid. It can't be reverse osmosis. It actually has to have minerals in it, right? Because you have to split the anions and the cations. So this is why those machines will actually give you drops and add, you know, bleach to it, you know, chloride, and also salt. So that way it can split the streams. And so now, you know, through the plates, and now you have an artificial high pH water. But here's the thing, your cells can't take that in. Your body has to harmonize it. It has to tune it to you. And when we use numbers like in the pH scale of like, say, 8 to the stomach of a 2, 3, those are little numbers. Oh, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, listen, those are orders of magnitude that are massive. Your body already shifts things from the pH of the stomach to that, to empties out into the duodenum or the duodenum, right? So it empties, it goes out of the stomach, goes on the top of the small intestine. And then now all the alkaline bile and pancreatic secretions have to come in there and now shift its pH hugely, bigly. Okay. It's got to really make that big shift. So the point is that happens for a reason, and it determines the tuning, it's actually the secondary tuning. First tuning happens in the mouth and your saliva, but the second one happens in the stomach. And then the third happens in that little junction.
How is it the mouth tunes water? You're not actually referring to the idea of enzyme rich saliva. Are you talking about like the actual electrical frequencies of the body changing the frequency of the frequency of the water?
Both.
Okay.
The saliva is rich in some stuff. So whoever you're swapping spit with, you better be selective, because there's a lot of information in that spit.
How can you describe that to people, like this idea of information? Because I know this also relates to like this, you know, when I race, I have a few little bottles of this oral IV in my fuel belt, which I know you helped to invent. And I know that has to do with embedding frequencies into water too. And some people find this to be pretty woo, but can you just kind of give me an overview of how it is that your body could change the information in water, or that the information in water could be changed?
Yeah. So light is just a writable device. You know, it's a liquid crystal. You know, you're familiar with our friend Jerry's work, you know, Dr. Pollock.
Dr. Gerald Pollock. I interviewed him.
Yeah. Jerry's the bomb, man. He's another guy I just want to kiss on the cheek. And the thing about it is his work is a good platform to understand this. But what I let people understand is that when you put something into the body, it has to make it at its frequency for it to be harmonized, or it just creates a net negative effect. Okay. And oftentimes the body can't do that. Sometimes we want it to, because you know, you mentioned hormesis a lot of times too. But the point is when you put something into your mouth, all kinds of enzymes and hormones begin to meld into and come into congruency with anything that you eat, which is why we want to fully, you know, masticate. Now, we want to really chew. Eat, you know, where your mindset is and where your environment is also going to, you know, determine how your body receives that food too. So, you know, we do labs with saliva, right? You know, all kinds of, you know, a hormone spit test. Mm-hmm. So it's in there. It's metabolically active with all these informatic molecules we call hormones and neurotransmitters, but there's enzymes and there's minerals, just a ton of things. And there's microbes. Microbes also help us tune things. So, you have to realize that the impact happens in there of what you're, there is a component. Okay. But the whole take home here, where I was going with this is that you got to be mindful of how your body has to exert an energy in order to do that tuning. And that comes from your mineral status. It's hugely minerals, other things that are on the periodic table of elements. So, you know, that's what does it. So in other words, your body starts to tune it and activate things in the mouth, and then it preps it for the stomach. The stomach's already getting its information on what to put into to receive this food from that signal. Then you swallow it. Then it responds even further. And then as it's doing its magical chemistry in there, it starts signaling to the intestines and letting it know what's coming through the pipeline. So there, it's a whole system, and the point is you got to be mindful of all of that. And you know, again, everybody's different. You know, it even comes into you know, your food too, if you're a secretor or non-secretor.
Okay, so basically, the The big picture is that when it comes to the teeth, the pH of the water doesn't matter that much because you have salivary enzymes that will adjust the pH right after you consume it. However, for the entire body, you do have to take into account the mineral status of the water that you're consuming, as well as the actual frequencies, like how many metal plates it's passed over, whether it's been sitting in an aquifer. And this would be a situation in which doing things like adding minerals to water, structuring water, exposing water to sunlight, doing a lot of these things to improve the ability of water to hydrate and pass through the cell membrane would be what you'd want to do.
And because there's a lot of channels, there's, you know, you got to go in, you know, in the mouth, out of, you know, down to the stomach, out of the stomach, into the intestines, out of the intestines, into the blood, out of the blood, into the interstitial space, out of that interstitial space, into the cell membrane, out of the cell membrane, into the mitochondrial membrane. You see, there's all these doors. So the only way you're moving molecules is with mineral energy. And if you are, you have a finite amount of that. And if you are consuming a lot of high alkaline or low acidic pH things over time, based upon your mineral status, your body gets taxation over time. Now, I'm not saying those waters don't have clinical bearing. They do, right? This is why people would pay, oh man, it did all the difference for me. But you got to know when to take the exit. I mean, I love zip lining, but after a while, I'm just like, whew, that's enough. You know what I'm talking about? I'm a kiteboarder. So I'm like, after a few spills, I'm like, oh, that's fine. But then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm done. So it's the balanced understanding of that. So you do want to always have a high quality water free of bad things and pollutants in it. You do want to have minerals in it. And then that mineral and water, you want to make it cohesive. You know, we want to make it, you know, together, not clustered. That's a false term. We want a cohesive lattice. We don't want clustered water. And we want, you know, to have the body be able to use it where it needs to and work on the function of it. So food does that. And it, of course, anything that you drink. Now, if you're consuming, like, say, Coca-Cola, and you keep bathing that over your teeth over time and holding it in there and not, you know, eating any food, it does stay in there. And then that can harm teeth over time.
Okay.
But a seltzer water is what that original post was. No, you'd be hard pressed to demineralize the teeth drinking seltzer water. That was the point.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. It contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. That'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original, they've got one that's like a summer sausage, they have a garlic sausage, they have a teriyaki, it's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. I get laughed at maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this off from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off.
Okay, now I want to make sure that I address a couple of other kind of controversial topics that came up on the Facebook page that you piped in on. The first one is related to this guy I had on the podcast named Dr. Stephen Gundry, who wrote a book called The Plant Paradox about how plants have lectins in them that can damage the body, so you shouldn't eat most of these plants. You know, you got to like pull all the seeds out of your tomato, and if you make spaghetti squash, you know, discard every last little seed, sure. You know, things like that. So. You had your own thoughts on lectins that you wanted to express, I do believe. So fill me in, dude. Are you avoiding all tomatoes and peeling them and throwing out the seeds? Or are you not on that bandwagon?
Yeah, no, not at all. And not only just not the bandwagon. Again, it's a dogmatic thing. There's a lot of things out there. And again, let me just be clear so that way I don't be misread, because, you know, I tell people, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. I don't ad hominem anybody, but we can talk in scientific terms of premise. It just has never panned out in clinical practice for me. I've never seen it. It's a tenet. I get it. It can sound sexy and romantic that plants don't want us to eat them. Therefore, they create these lectins. Therefore, we should not eat them. Well, I don't know. If that's the case, then we are most miserable, because lectins are just absolutely ubiquitous. And I know he talks about that in the book too. But the thing is, I don't believe that plants, know or have the emotion of not eating. There are survival mechanisms and things like that. I mean, down south, if we have a fruit tree that's not growing, we prune the hell out of it, and then we beat the hell out of it with a 2x4, right? And then the next year, it grows back, and we have a whole bunch more fruit. So it responds to the—
That's what you do? You beat the hell out of it with a 2x4?
Yeah, you hit it. You hit the trunk and all the branches. You just— not like the hell out of it, but we say it because, you know, we always say that you don't beat the hell out of it. So we hit it pretty good. Knock, knock, knock the tree, knock the tree. After you've pruned it, and you do this, you know, in the wintertime, come springtime, you'll have a big boost of growth, and you'll have more fruit. It'll bear more fruit because it there is an intelligence to plants. Okay, they do want to reproduce. But to expand that to the lectins having this, you know, alternative agenda inside of us, I just haven't seen that ever pan out because of how I monitor my patients, you know, broadly across systems biology. I haven't seen that. Sometimes, you know, wheat and all its, you know, agglutinins, and it's, you know, you got saponins and you got lectins and all these little molecules, which is fun in a marketing spin of, you know, quote unquote anti-nutrients, but that presupposes that the patient, it would be, inappropriate for the patient. Some patients, we heal them.
Now, what would you test to find out if someone was actually getting damaged by consuming lectins? When you say you're testing the biology, you brought that up a few times about how you test. I'm curious what kind of tests you run on your patients, like what gets you the most bang for your buck from your patients? And especially in addition to that, two-part question, here we go. How would you test for lectin damage or whether or not those are causing issues?
Yeah. So I'm an upstreamist. So I want to look at systems biology and what's its function at this time. So you want to assess multiple systems, not just go, oh, that's a cool test, I'll do that. I feel like I got a hormone imbalance, let me do a Dutch. Oh, I have a GI problem, let me do a zonulin test. So the narrative is you, if you really want to be serious about status, you have to look at all the systems because they all eat out of the same refrigerator and they all crap in the same toilet, right? All your cells grow up together in the same neighborhood. So you need to know what they're all doing together, not individually. So my assessment is always broad, you know, and it depends upon different factors in the patient's care. Finances and everything's come into play. But if they have a principal GI complaint, of course I'm going to do a stool analysis, and there's various ones for that. It depends. We always start with their story. We listen to what's going on, what their complaints are, and what their history is, and then we determine how deep we have to go. But as a standard workup, you do want to do a stool test. You want to find out the microbiome and what's going on in there, right? So you always want to know where you're going to be dumping things and capacity of the pancreas to respond.
And if somebody gets a stool test, where would you see if lectins were an issue?
Okay, so the thing about it is you don't have to determine if it's lectin specifically. See, that's the thing. That's a misdirection. That's the Oz behind the curtain kind of thing. You look and see what is the status of the tube, right? Do we have elevated pancreatic elastase or PE1? Right? Do we have elevated, eosinophil protein X? Do we have high beta-glucuronidase? Are there a whole bunch of triglycerides and phospholipids and cholesterol, coming out in the stool, which means...
And those would be all markers like leaky gut or inflammation, right?
They could be, absolutely. And the thing is we can test for zonulin. I automatically assume if somebody has a chronic condition that they have some level of leaky gut anyways. I don't need to do that. Same thing when it comes to SIBO. And a lot of people are used to that approach because they want to have a diagnosis, the name it, blame it, claim it, tame it game. They want to have it called something. Oh, I have SIBO. So then they do the breath test or different things like that. Well, I'm going to support it anyways. So some of those tests that are specific, like say a methane and hydrogen breath test and a zonulin, I'm not really looking at that, not initially. So you don't have to look at lectin as the offending agent. You look at the biological terrain. You take a look at the tube across the board.
And so if somebody is eating lectin-rich foods, they're eating, their tomatoes without peeling and deseeding them, they're perhaps having wheat or oats or rye or barley or spelt, and you do a test and you're not seeing any signs of gastric inflammation and you're not seeing any signs of gastric distress or bacterial imbalances, then you don't really worry about it.
Roger that. That's relatively true.
Now, do you still personally do things like soak and ferment and pay attention to the actual preparation method to deactivate, like, for example, wheat, right? Like we always ferment our wheat. We make sourdough and we choose it like a non-GMO wheat and ferment it if we're going to eat wheat. Like, do you take those steps or do you not worry about that?
I do. I love legumes, but only when I'm in fast oxidation. So
what do you mean?
Well, legumes are a high purine food. They have higher nucleotide proteins. It's different. And again, you got to understand, it's not just the lectins. Just like, okay, well, what about all the lycopene in the tomato seeds and the skin? Remember how good and wonderful that is? See, the thing is yeah. You got to look at the context of the patient of what you're getting with it or not. So my point is yes, I always properly consume legumes. I'm not going to eat raw legumes. You can actually get really sick from that. And it's not just the lectins. Lectin is part of that picture. But properly prepared, soaked, strained off, pressure cooked or cooked slow and slow over time, it becomes more beneficial. However, the thing is there are some people that too much of that protein moiety, that source, is contraindicated to how their body fuels itself. We're talking about another one I call the fundamental allostatic control. So you got a glucogenic imbalance versus ketogenic imbalance. Some people call it fast oxidizer, slow oxidizer, but there's a ton of misinformation out there on those two terms. So if you Google those two terms, and there's a couple of Fender's websites out there that are just awful. This is when you can start getting it. And that was another great book. I'll give you one is Nutrition and Your Mind by George Watson. So okay. Watson, Nutrition and Your Mind. He's the guy who came up with those two terms. He's a psychiatrist.
Fast oxidizer and slow oxidizer. Those are the terms he came up with.
You got it.
Okay.
So anyways, he basically, real quick on that, is he saw patients with all kinds of different mental disorders, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. And his postulate was they were eating things incorrect for their current metabolic status. And when he determined their metabolic status, he then made their food selection based upon that. And they had a complete reversal of symptoms. Right. So again, there's different micronutrients that have to come into play. So when it comes to legumes, they are nutrient dense. They're fantastic. They're great for fast oxidizers. Okay. Slow oxidizers, not so much. But people say, but they're loaded with these nutrients. That's great. But they're more than just the nutrients they're loaded with. It's their tangible thing. Does that make sense? It's how your body.
Yeah.
So in the same thing when it comes to fermented, I love fermented foods, okay? But certain fermented foods, like if you have, let's say I was talking about that anabolic imbalance, right? You're overly acidic. You need to avoid fermented foods, regardless of the status of your tubes.
Not for life, but while you're in a very acidic state.
Boom. That's what I'm talking about. So if you have too much omega-3s because you're trying to eat a whole bunch of seafood and all that stuff, which is wonderful, by the way, and you have low saturated fat in your diet and you have an anabolic imbalance, you shouldn't be eating fermented foods. You shouldn't be eating butter or cream or cheese either. But what you need is like cod liver oil, flaxseed, hemp, and CBD, by the way. It's perfect for those. So just like that, CBD is not the panacea. For some people, it's terrible. Like I can't do it because I have a 2D6 SNP.
What's that mean?
So, you know, your cytochrome P450 system, your phase one detoxification, first pass, right? So in other words, if you, all substances are cleared through those enzymes. Remember on that journey to become you, your body has all these stop loss gaps. And one of them are the cytochromes, and they're called cytochrome P450s because they maximum absorption of light frequency at 450 nanometers. What? Another tidbit. Which is the spike on your TV and your cell phones. So that's the reason why that little the light frequency coming through your eyes and on your skin at 450 nanometers disrupts detoxification enzymes. But the thing about it is so if you have, you know, like MTHFR, right? That's a famous one out there.
Right.
People respond to folate and B12 differently based upon that. Well, it gets all kinds of press. But your other ones, like your 2D6, where we clear different medications and psychedelics and cannabis from, if you have impaired clearance genetically, that substance, though it is clinically and therapeutically beneficial on the premise, might be contraindicated for you, or you might need a different dose. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by micronutrients, and there's multiple things that come into play. So we have to determine what is the patient's unique status? Okay, what is their status of electrolytes and minerals?
And if somebody wanted to actually look at, let's say, their genetic testing results from 23andMe, you said the one that they look at to see how a gene would affect the response to cannabis. Did you say it's CYP?
Cytochrome P450.
Okay.
Right, is the name of the system. So it's 2D6.
Okay.
Now, I can tell you the gene location if you want.
That's like because that's easy to search for people.
Oh, right on. Okay. So if you go to your 23andMe, you go up and you hit raw data, and you want to just type in Romeo Sierra or RS 1135840.
RS 1135840.
So, and there's
okay, another, cool. There's, I'll put that in the show notes for those of you who want to do that, who want to look into that.
And there's another one real quick is RS 1065852. So there's different alleles within the thing. So it's on the 19th chromosome, right. And you want to take a look and see if you have a SNP there, you know, is it, you know, CG or is it CC or GG, right? So you got to know that. So my point is, just like MTHFR, there's all kinds of other genetically encoded first pass phase one detoxification that determines what the substance does in you. We can't just say fermented foods have a benefit across the board. Lectins right. are bad across the board. You know, PUFAs are bad across the board. That's not true. All of those things can be beneficial and they can be harmful. It depends upon the patient. You have to know what your status is at the time to really get the deep biohack. Does that make sense?
Interesting.
Okay. And it's a complicated thing. I wish I could just give it snippet. This is why we have, you know, wonderful, you know, light givers like you, you know, letting people know these are all the things. I'm giving you tools. I'm experimenting with these. I'm showing you what that N equals one looks like. You know, this works for me. It might not work for you, right? You're not dogmatic. And that's what I love about you, right? You say, I'm going to just guinea pig all these things for you guys and, you know, cut through the BS and then say, hey, this warrants more questioning or here.
Sure. Even though it gets expensive after talking to guys like you, because I got to go out and
buy
full body freaking like Thor beds. I'll sell some stuff. I'll convince my wife. Yeah. Tell her she can buy some shoes if I can buy a Thor bed. You've also posted, because I want to make sure I get a chance to ask you about this. This is kind of a controversial post on my website. And that was this idea about shrooms. And somebody was talking about shrooms and how they were thrown to shrooms and how shrooms would change their life, et cetera. And you piped in, you had some pretty strong thoughts on shrooms. So what are your thoughts on shrooms?
Well, just like anything else, there's good, the bad.
As in magic mushrooms, reishi and chaga, but actual mushrooms that a lot of people are using for increased neurogenesis for psychedelic status. Yeah. PTSD, all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, you know, the thing is this, again, you'll never catch me being duplicitous. I think everything is on the board. Okay. This is, I'll kind of give you my steadfast rules in the sense that if it doesn't make you have diarrhea, throw up, intoxicate you, right? It's able to be eaten. There you go. Because how did people determine things? Right? Like, oh man, that just blew out my butt. Better not do it. This one, you know, just made me emesis vomit. Oh, don't want to eat that. That's poisonous. Oh, this one just gave me a trip. Might not want to do that. But then some people go, well, hold on a minute. That was a cool trip. I just had a spirit journey. That just opened me up to some things. So my point is, they can be a very useful tool, man. And quite frankly, you didn't know this, but so I'm collaborating with a physician now to set up clinical application of psychedelics. So we've got a place down in Nassau, Bahamas, you know, where things, you know, the laws are different, and we're doing some work here in the States. So you can leverage, you know, DMT and you know, ketamine and different things like that for different things to unlock a certain situation for a patient. So in a clinical setting, I think it's a great thing. Non-clinical setting, it can be a little bit different. But people would say, well, if I'm in a sweat lodge with a shaman and we're doing things right, or I'm down in, you know, the Amazon doing some Aya and different things, that's a clinical setting. It might not be what you say is clinical thing, because you wear a lab coat and stethoscope sometimes. Actually, I don't wear it anymore. It's a different kind of deal. My point is, as the world around us, it's very rough. We don't have to get into all the political and religious things that are plaguing the planet now. But the thing about it is people are going to be looking for and do look for what I call they basically are experience shopping, right? They want to experience something.
Right. It's very trendy.
Yeah.
DHT, ayahuasca, people doing these things like, you know, every month or so.
DMT and stuff. Yeah.
Pop, you know, microdosing with LSD every 3 days. You know, there's a lot of that going on.
And listen, if you want to do that, knock yourself out. But, you know, that's your own choice and freedom. Just don't expect other people to, you know, pay for the possible negative consequences.
Right. What biome? Because what you said on my page, you saw severe aberrations to neurotransmitters, methylation pathways, liver enzyme function, kidney function, blood sugar metabolism, sleep cycles, libido, and mitochondrial function in people who were frequently using shrooms. Right. So how are you actually quantifying that? That's not a stool test, right?
No, sir. So we're going to see that in blood and organic acids. Okay. Now, let me just be clear. If somebody, I'm going to even call it, it wants to experiment with magic mushrooms and have a trip. Okay. Are you going to die? No, that just really doesn't happen. Okay. I get it. The safety profile on them singularly like that. And, you know, with prudence, it's really not that bad. But if people have situations and status in their emotions and their mindset to where they're seeking, you know, disconnect from that by using these active substances that have a tremendous power. If you do it without thanksgiving and prudence and direction and what you can do with what things get revealed to your, you know, to yourself consciously, and you just do it because of the fact that you're just wanting to experience it, well, that's going to come to a detriment over time, especially if you don't know, like what we talked about, like say your cytochrome P450 status, okay? Because, like for instance, 5-methoxy-DMT, right? Little, you know, in the little toad lick, right? So if we hit that, or the patient hits that, it is a substance that must be cleared through the cytochrome P450 system, right? Which is why we usually have to, you know, in different ceremonies, you're going to mix in some ayahuasca. You're going to do maybe, you know, some tobacco, right? Or there's different combinations depending upon, you know, where you're at, right? So some harmaline. So because in order to get, like, say the 5-hydroxy-DMT experience, you have to block the MAO, right? Well, some people already have an impaired MAO, right? Some people have a deficient COM-T, just like an MTHFR. So the COM-T metabolizes a DMT. And if your 2D6 is impaired and you're taking, then there's a range of dose and you're not working in a clinical setting and there's not a lot of measurement, you're just kind of going on, well, we give everybody this same amount of this in the little bowl, we brew it, or there's different things. And you don't know your body's capacity to metabolize this stuff, and you repeat it over time. I have seen countless times people's methylation cycles and liver enzymes get impaired. Because when you look at the science, I'm familiar with the science, and they show, like I said, a safety record. So I'm not here to scare people of them, right? But you got to think about it, you know, source, form, dose, frequency, and duration. All how much you use, how often, and over time. And then, of course, if you're not eating a healthful diet, right, to support what the impact was in your body, and then you rinse, lather, and repeat and experience it again, you're going to put taxation. It's the same thing that all kinds of medications do. I mean, it's the same problem with, you know, antidepressants. Right. And, you know, and those medications, I mean, it's the third most prescribed category of drug in the United States, antidepressants. So second being, you know, anti-lipidemic, and the first one being analgesic or pain meds. Right. So all three of those top meds have to be processed and metabolized. Just look at the drug monograph and they'll tell you what cytochrome and the pharmacology of it, what cytochrome P450 it's cleared through. So if you don't know what your cytochrome status is, you might get more of that drug or less of that drug than anybody else that you're getting that dose. This is now why we have this term out there, precision medicine, you know, because they're doing genetic testing now, more mainstream and conventional, because they're going, oh, well, what's the difference between needing a 20 milligram or a 40 or a 100 of a drug, right? It's kind of like aspirin. Right. Well, you know, why baby aspirin was this, you know, 83 milligrams. What is that? Well, because 100 will make you bleed and 60 doesn't work. Right. So there's a dose. So that's my point when it comes to psychedelics. They're very useful, but you got to be prepared and have a game plan afterwards for unlocking that consciousness and different things that your mind shows you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. So it sounds to me like it's almost like this concept of a hedonistic calendar, like Jamie Wheel and Stephen Kotler talked about when I interviewed them in their book Stealing Fire, about how many of these things should be limited in terms of their use and used in very specific situations with specific intentions. But it sounds to me like on top of that, what you're saying is that before you dive into some of these categories of psychedelics or other drugs, you need to understand the actual biochemical pathways via which they're metabolized, like, say, the cytochrome P450 pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have deficits in that pathway, as could be determined via something like a urinary organic acids test,
that's right,
then it might not be the best thing for you to do until you've sorted out those biochemical pathways.
Nailed it. That's my message, right? It's not this or that, yes or no. It's how about we show how awesomely selective one status that you are. And the thing about it is, you know, in like a urine organic acid panel, like one of my other workups I do for every single patient is the Genova Diagnostics NutriVal Plasma, not the FMV. Okay. The plasma. Well, we know that if you want to take a look at pathways of involvement of like, say, methylation status, right, you can take a look at methylmalonic acid in your urine. And the fig glue, right? So the form of aminoglutaric acid.
Fig glue
and MMA. Okay. Fig glue is the metabolic marker for folate, and MMA is that for B12. Okay. Then we have xanthorenic and kynurenics for B6. Then you also need a new RBC magnesium. So those principal ones, if someone has let's just make a worst case scenario. Okay. So if I just go ahead and say, if somebody has a situation where they have excessive levels of methylmalonic acid coming out in their urine, excessive levels of fig glue coming out, and they have an RBC magnesium of less than 4, you don't want to be putting those substances in right now. This is why Balanced Protocol, my program, has 3 phases: nourish, balance, purify. Build yourself up first. Nourish your body, your mindset, your environment. Then start balancing things out. And the only way you're going to know if you qualify to do that or not is if you take a deeper quantification. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So that's really eye-opening to know that, because a lot of people really are just popping these things without knowing if they're in the proper biochemical situation.
And here's the thing, brother. It's like that for all the nutraceuticals too. Whether it's NAD or whether, you know, it's creatine or if it's a different protein or a nootropic or any of that stuff. I think they all have their place and premise. But you need to know, right? You have different cooking instructions at altitude, because we know water doesn't boil at the same temperature. If you're at 5,000 feet, if you're up in Colorado or something like that, it's going to be different. If you smoke a doobie up at altitude versus down altitude, for the same person, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
It's these different levels of micronutrients. You have to reconstruct your story. That's my message to people, is you got to embrace yourself as a unique individual. All these things that you teach and you motivate and inspire people to do are phenomenal. They're tools, they're strategies. But finding out where your starting point is in that journey is what I suggest for everybody to do. And it takes some doing, and it's not the simplest thing, unfortunately. I wish I could just, you know, give it to everybody, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got one other question for you, because I know you're big into this idea of protecting the body from non-native EMFs and the concept of electromagnetic fields kind of being an issue for the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you personally do about that? Like, how do you personally mitigate the effects? Because I know when I posted on my Facebook page about this idea of like EMF blockers, you know, like Himalayan salt lamps and things like that, like, you seem to take issue with that. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are on these type of mitigation strategies a lot of people are using for things like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and EMFs.
Yeah, well, the first thing is all those are foreign and they're not beneficial to the body. However, you can, if your status is strong, you can have a controlled burn. Okay. In other words, I use a cell phone. I don't ever put it in my day.
But you said you don't use a headset.
Correct. I sure don't. I don't do that.
So how do you talk on your cell phone? Just on the speaker?
Yep. And I set it down. I'm not even holding it. Now, there are times where, you know, I'm out and about, my wife's at Disney with the princesses, and I have to come up what I call a periscope depth. I come off of airplane mode. I check and see if there's a thing. So we have we have plans in place of when I need to, you know, break the guideline. Right. And so then if I am walking around and she has a call and she's like, hey, honey, I'm stuck or something like that, you know, I'm going to do it. So I'm not like, oh my God, I never touched my cell phone. I don't ever put it to my head, no matter what. That's just not going to happen. But I keep it. It's on airplane mode all the time. Okay. And I just pop on from time to time, check and see if there's any messages, and I go about my business. Right. So you don't want those energetic exposures that close to you, because we're already a microwave planet. It's everywhere. Right. And so by the time, we have more, it was actually happened in 2014. We have more devices than we do people on the planet. So it's everywhere. I mean, everything is smart, and all these devices in people's house and Bluetooth this, and then your impact indicators on, I got a new truck and I got to go to the dealer and have them turn all that off. And the thing about it is I have what I call the 3D law. Okay. And it's what I call disconnect. That's the only way to deal with these EMF bombs. That's it. Disconnect. It shouldn't be on. Don't have a source of them. Right. Second rule is distance. If you can't turn it off, create distance. Right. So it's just like a tuning fork. If I hit it and hold it up to my cloaca, to my ear, it's going to be different than if I hit it and it's across the room. The frequency is still there, but the amplitude is less. Right. So you want distance. Third thing is if you can't disconnect it and you got some distance and you can't really do that, is duration. Keep it to a minimum. Only do it when you have to do it. That's it. Because the only safe level is really zero.
So what do you think about these things that are like neutralizers, like pendants or like certain devices that create frequencies that might mitigate some of the frequencies produced by the EMF radiating devices, shields, cases, et cetera?
They're all erroneous. And I'm not just saying that dogmatically. I've tested them. I've bought them. I've busted them open and just see little packed in little fingerprints mushed with clay. And the meters don't change. And I haven't seen it do difference in Krillian photography, and I haven't seen it change in bioelectrical dermal screenings. Some people do the little dog and pony show with the applied kinesiology, but don't get me started on that. I'll probably piss off some of your audience, but it's okay. But anyways, in my clinical experience with multiple patients and myself, putting it through its rules of rigor, I have found them to do nothing. Now, if someone says, hey, work for me, then I go, well, congratulations, rock on. But are you monitoring your repeatable, testable, quantifiable metabolic markers? If you're not, and you're just going on how you feel, well, then you're going to find yourself in a really bad place over time, 100% of the time.
Is there a certain test or a certain device you would use to test for these type of things?
Well, yeah, all the way from an RF meter, like an acoustometer, and a magnetic or a milligauss meter, like the Alpha Labs UHS-1. And then there's a Geiger counter. Some of these things actually are this clay that it's actually emitting radioactivity. It's amazing.
Wow. Interesting.
So people are saying,
the acoustometer is one that you like. What's the clay that you're talking about?
Well, it's which one was it? Was it the, I think it's called the Home Defender. It's this little gray plug, and their whole shtick is there's this magic clay from somewhere that, that's inside of this device, and you put the little three plunger in your thing, and it then harmonizes the environment. Spend $50, buy one, get your little flat screwdriver, bust that open, and just look at the little, ball of clay that's on the inside, stuck, connected to the prongs on the inside. That's all it is.
Wow, I've never even heard of that.
Well,
interesting.
Here's the thing.
I'll have to look it up.
Some people might say that about my hydration product or different things that I do. I get it. Don't believe me just because I tell you. I want everybody to challenge every single thing that anybody tells them, because the best thing is firsthand clinical knowledge and quantification, regardless of what the tests out there say in the science, because they lie, man. Boys, there are a lot of lies out there. So do it yourself.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you want one of these frequency generators, okay, great. But you got to measure first, find out, by what matrix are you determining there was benefit? That's all I ask people to do, is come up with a decision-making matrix.
Yeah.
You see
yeah.
what I'm saying?
No, like, I like it. I like the approach with quantification like that.
That's it.
So yeah, you, between this and the previous podcast that I did with you, where we covered a host of stuff. We took a deep dive into water in the last show that I did with you. So for those of you listening in, just go to the show notes for this episode. I'll link over to that one. We only scratch the surface of the kind of stuff that Dr. Beck talks about. So I'll link to his stuff over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Beck2. That's Beck the number 2, B-E-C-K 2. And I will also, I've been taking some notes, and I'll put links to everything from like the tuning forks and the rubber mallet we talked about to the books and the research by Dr. Ravici that Dr. Beck mentioned, the different labs that he talked about, and then also the resources, anything else that Dr. Beck sends me after this episode, I'll put in there for you guys. In addition to that, if you have comments, if you have questions, if you have feedback, that's the best place to do it. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/Beck2. That's B-E-C-K, the number 2. And just leave your comments. Either Anthony or I will jump in and reply to what you have to say. And in the meantime, Anthony, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. You're always a wealth of information.
Oh, man. And I love doing it. You're one of my absolute favorites. You're doing it right. And I send people to listen to you all the time. You're one of two folks that I really, you know, just have people go to, but you're the, you know, a principal there. And, you know, and that's the whole thing, man, it's really super important for people to look at them at N=1, but then do it right. Not just one thing at a time, and realize that your environment is everything, where it all comes from. You know, it's the air you breathe and how you breathe, right? And you've had people on for that, all the way from, you know, HOF to Oxygen Advantage. There's information out there, you know, for that. Yeah. And then there's water, right? And then there's light, and then there's sound, and then there's EMF, and then there's food. I call those the 6 environmental inputs, right? So that's key number 1 of my particular program. So we really want to master those 6 things, or everything else downstream is really kind of futile, or at least get those going, right? Don't pick one that you just resonate with. Unfortunately, if you really want to get the best out of it, the best biohacking approach is you got to do all of those. It's the symphony. I know it's a lot. You don't have to take it overnight, but you know, there's you got to do that. And oftentimes it does require, you know, somebody like me or you to help walk them through that, you know, and help guide them in that journey and mentor them a little bit, because it can be arduous, and it's the night is dark and full of terrors. There's all kinds of
places. It's dark and full of terrors.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I'll name this podcast. All right. Well, folks, thanks for listening in. We're out of time, but if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/Beck2, everything's in there. And in the meantime, Anthony, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Ben. Love you, brother.
All right, folks. I'm Ben Greenfield, along with Dr. Anthony Beck, signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com. Have an amazing week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.